Good morning, Redeemer Bible Church. We continue the story of the patriarch Jacob. But I thought the best way for us to continue his story is to fast forward for just a minute to another story that we are familiar with, the story of Moses setting the people of Israel free from slavery in Egypt under Pharaoh, taking them out of Egypt across the Red Sea, through the Red Sea, and then into the wilderness for those 40 years. While they were in the wilderness, Moses climbed the mountain to meet with God. And it was there he was given the law. The first five books in our Bibles, the Pentateuch, these five books are histories, narratives, codes of law. These were given to Moses for the people of Israel. And hear that phrase, the people of Israel. 12 tribes, an entire nation, a people group, at the moment looking for their home, the promised land. But they know who they are. They have their identity. They are God's people. They are the people that have come from their patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The promises given to those men, the promises of a people, of prosperity, of a place. We see that they have come to pass in large part in these people, and now they are hearing through Moses the stories. As I said last week, the authorized biography of the patriarchs. So when we are reading about Jacob, this is not some random figure that is there to give us moralistic information. This is one of the fathers of the faith, one of the fathers of our faith. Jacob, a flawed man, one that we see character development. Talk about an arc from wretched to broken and humbled in the life of Jacob. And last week, we ended with the Lord remembering Rachel, opening her womb, and she gave birth to Joseph. And I asked the question at the end of last week, how does one get blessed? And the lesson from that text last week is we need to come with a posture of submission and surrender and worship to God, recognizing that he is the one through whom blessings come. We can't create our own blessings if they are not something that God would have for us. And this morning, we're taking a look at the next chapter of Jacob's life. Jacob has now seen through Laban, through his wife, Rachel, what this deceit, what this manipulation, what it does to people, what it does to relationships. The light is starting to shine. And now we pick up with Jacob being aware that God is beginning to fulfill the promises he made to him at Bethel, a people. He was probably expecting to marry Rachel and have a couple of kids, and then God would do what God would do. And things did not go according to Jacob's plan, as we know. 7 years of service to marry Rachel, to be given instead Leah. A week later, he was allowed to marry Rachel, but had to serve another 7 years. So 14 years of service to Uncle Laban. And in that time, in relatively short order, 12 children. Yeah, a people. God is creating a people through the line of Jacob. The 12 tribes of Israel find their origin here. I can only imagine the reactions of the people of Israel in the wilderness with Moses when they're hearing this story anew, afresh, with new details, straight from the source, as it were. But now at the end of these 14 years, he's wondering about the place, and he's wondering about the prosperity. Well, the place, now is the time to go. He's going to go leave Laban and head back home, head back to the land, head back to the place. But prosperity, that's what this text is about this morning. How does prosperity come? And as we're hearing this text, which is a very confusing and challenging text, you'll see in a moment, some questions for us to be asking. What is prosperity? What do we look for in our own lives? What do we consider to be prosperity? How do we get it? And then, how are we supposed to use it? We don't have to look too far to see that prosperity is usually defined by personal accomplishment and financial success. So how do we get it? We get it on our own. We work for it. We create our own prosperity. And it's ours. And then how do we use it? Well, it depends definitely upon the person, but the wisdom of the day is we use it to exert power. If we have prosperity, if we have that success, if we have those resources, culture tells us to use it, to wield it for our purposes. Well, we're going to take a look and see how prosperity comes about in Jacob's life. So before I start walking through some of the nuances and the challenges of this text, let's just read it. Genesis chapter 30, starting with verse 25. As soon as Rachel had borne Joseph, Jacob said to Laban, "Send me away, that I may go to my own home and country. Give me my wives and my children, for whom I have served you, that I may go, for you know the service I have given you." But Laban said to him, "If I have found favor in your sight, I have learned by divination that the Lord has blessed me because of you. Name your wages, and I will give it." Jacob said to him, "You yourself know how I have served you, and how your livestock has fared with me. For you had little before I came, and it has increased abundantly. And the Lord has blessed you wherever I turned. But now, when shall I provide for my own household also?" He said, "Well, what shall I give you?" Jacob said, "You shall not give me anything. If you will do this for me, I will again pasture your flock and keep it. Let me pass through all your flock today, removing from it every speckled and spotted sheep, and every black lamb, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and they shall be my wages. So my honesty will answer for me later, when you come to look into my wages with you. Every one that is not speckled and spotted among the goats, and black among the lambs, if found with me, shall be counted stolen." Laban said, "Good, let it be as you have said." But that day, Laban removed the male goats that were striped and spotted, and all the female goats that were speckled and spotted, every one that had white on it, and every lamb that was black, and put them in the charge of his sons. And he set a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob. And Jacob pastured the rest of Laban's flock. Then Jacob took fresh sticks of poplar and almond and plane trees and peeled white streaks in them, exposing the white of the sticks. He set the sticks that he had peeled in front of the flocks in the troughs, that is, the watering places where the flocks came to drink. And since they bred when they came to drink, the flocks bred in front of the sticks. And so the flocks brought forth striped, speckled, and spotted. And Jacob separated the lambs and set the faces of the flocks towards the striped and all the black in the flock of Laban. He put his own droves apart and did not put them with Laban's flock. Whenever the stronger of the flock were breeding, Jacob would lay the sticks in the troughs before the eyes of the flock that they might breed among the sticks. But for the feebler of the flock, he would not lay them there. So the feebler would be Laban's, and the stronger, Jacob's. Thus, the man increased greatly, and had great flocks, female servants, male servants, camels, and donkeys. All right, you can see maybe why I said that this is a text that can be a bit confusing. I'll be honest, I've struggled with this text and have spent quite a bit of time trying to figure out what is going on with all of this confusing language and descriptions of the flocks and the strange behavior with the sticks, the rods that he's whittling to reveal stripes and put before the animals. Well, we'll get there. So notice at the very beginning, verse 25, as soon as Rachel bore Joseph, Jacob said to Laban. Okay, 14 years. 14 years he has served. Wisdom establishes that it is appropriate for a man in this context to secure property and provision before family, so that you are able to provide for your family. Laban has prevented his own kin from being able to do that. Laban has exacted such a price from Jacob that Jacob has not been able to do anything to prepare to be the head of his household, to care for his wives, to care for his children, to provide for them. When Jacob was done with these 14 years of service, he was penniless. He had nothing. Laban made sure of it. Laban made sure that the debt of the dowry would be paid off and Jacob would still be dependent upon him. And so Jacob is saying, send me away. It's time for me to go home. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, that I may go. Three times in this quote, Jacob talks about the service that he's given. These 14 years were for these wives, and these children have come from their marriage. So can I go? It seems strange that he would have to ask Laban's blessing, as it were, permission to go. But Jacob was shrewd. He knew how the game was played. And at this time, if you were an indentured servant, if you were serving out your time to pay off a debt, well, your wives and your children don't belong to you. They belong to your master. They belong to the one that you are serving. And we see this next week when we're looking at the strong encounter between Jacob and Laban. Laban says, these are my wives, these are my daughters, and these are my children. He's making that claim. So Jacob here is establishing. Now we need to get this taken care of. These are mine, and I need you to agree with that so I can leave without you coming after me with a legal loophole later. So Laban has benefited greatly from Jacob working for him the past 14 years. As you see, the Lord has blessed you wherever I've turned, Jacob says to Laban. Laban has grown in wealth while Jacob has continued to exist in poverty. And notice what happens. Give me my wives, give me my children. But Laban said to him, if I have found favor in your sight, he is a flatterer. I have learned by divination. So that may be what's here. I have learned by divination. So that's very suspect. We know that Laban worships false gods. So it may be that he is using divination. And God has spoken through pagans using divination in the Hebrew scriptures. So it's not unheard of. But there is an Akkadian cognate to this word in the Hebrew that makes more sense, and it may be that that is what is meant here. And so if that's the case, the Akkadian cognate is become rich. So it would say, if I have found favor in your sight, I have become rich. and the Lord has blessed me because of you. Name your wages, and I will give it." I want you to notice the character of Laban here. Jacob is asking about his wives and his children, or in another way to say it, Laban's daughters and Laban's grandchildren. And what does Laban do? He turns it immediately to money. He turns it to greed. He turns it to avarice. He's seeing his cash cow is potentially leaving. So he says, "Name your wages and I will give it." The last time Laban said, "Name your wages," was in chapter 29, when he deceived Jacob by swapping out a bait and switch, violating the contract through careful use of language. So Jacob is hearing, "Name your wages and I will give it." He's not playing that game anymore. Laban knows if he pays Jacob anything, Jacob has to go back into indentured servitude. He has to go back into debt to pay it off. So he has to stick around. It's just pathetic. So Jacob reminds him of the success that Laban has experienced because of Jacob's presence. "But now, when shall I provide for my own household also?" He needs to be able to take care of this large family that he now has as he prepares to go back home. "Well, what shall I give you?" Laban asks. "Nothing." Jacob is going to play this above board. He is done with the deceit in this relationship. He is wanting no questions about what is going on. It may be that Laban is going to deceive, but Jacob is not going to do that this time around. So he wants nothing from Laban. So the offer that he makes is, "I'll tell you what, let me be one of your shepherds and to care for your flocks." And he does this for 6 more years. So that's a total of 20 years he's spending serving Laban. But then he gives the price. Historically, a shepherd could ask for 10 to 20% of the flock as their wages. What Jacob does, he says, "Let me go through and take out the speckled and the spotted and the black lambs, the speckled and the striped and speckled among the goats, and those will be my wages." The speckled, striped, spotted animals, these were rare. They were the exceptions. Normally, the goats and the sheep would be a solid color. So what Jacob is offering Laban, just as the 7 years he offered for Rachel, it's exceedingly generous. Indeed, it's foolish on the face of it. Laban jumped at this because it would be a very small percentage of the animals that would meet the criteria that Jacob is putting out. That's why he quickly says, "Good, let it be as you have said. It's a heck of a deal." But then, Laban, verse 35, "But that day, Laban removed the male goats that are striped and spotted." Jacob said he was going to do it. He was going to go through those flocks and take out those rare animals, the ones that are unusual, and set them aside to be his wages. And he would care for them separately than Laban's. And then offspring, any that are solid in color, those are Laban's. Any that are speckled or striped from the ones that he has taken, because genetics, those would be his. Laban goes through and he removes all of them. So what Jacob is left with, Laban's flocks, none of whom are striped or speckled, none of whom are this rarer variation that he could take as his wage. And Laban takes them and gives them to his sons and sends them days away so there couldn't be any chance of Jacob getting them. So right away, Laban deceives. He takes advantage. He goes in and takes unfair advantage over a deal where he already had the advantage, completely twisting the situation. He can't change his character. Now, question for you. I was talking to Lisa about this, and I think this is a fairly universal experience. A job that you have worked where you recognized, hey, I'm contributing a lot. I'm contributing a lot to the success of this company, or to the profitability of this store, or the image of this brand, whatever it might be, you recognize you are a significant contributor, but you are not reaping the benefits of it. That your employer sees you more as a tool to accomplish their ends than a person who has value and is contributing. There's that, I've created millions of dollars of revenue in the past quarter alone, and you're paying me next to nothing, and there's no bonuses, and there's no advancement. You feel used. This is what's happening with Laban. He is using Jacob. Jacob is the source of his profitability. And that's at risk. So Laban is stacking the deck against Jacob. It's perverse. It's very sad. And think about this. The reason that Jacob is doing this is so that he can care for his household. Remember at the earlier in the passage, verse 30, but now when shall I provide for my own household also? And who is in Jacob's household? Laban's daughters, Leah, Rachel, Laban's grandsons and granddaughter. And he is treating them like chattel. He is treating them as disposable things that are not worth these resources. He's robbing his own family, his own kin. And now we get to this confusing passage starting in 37. Jacob taking the fresh sticks of poplar. So there are several different ideas as to what might be going on here. So I want to say right off the top, I don't know for certain what is going on here. And it's been fun talking to people, reading commentaries, researching ancient Near East superstitions, to see all of the different conversations that are going on about what Jacob is doing with these rods and laying them in front of the sheep and the goats. So there was a superstition. There was the idea that what the animals see, what the females see before them as they are being mated, that's going to influence. That image that they see is going to influence their offspring. Obviously, that's ludicrous. That's not the way anything works. But that was a superstition that was present in the day. So it is possible here that Jacob is not trusting God to do what he has promised to do, and he's taking matters into his own hands again. Well, that certainly fits what we've seen of Jacob in the past. I struggle with that. There's a change occurring in Jacob. He is acknowledging what God is doing, his God is doing, and what he has done. So I struggle with that. And then I found a commentator, Nahum Sarna, very well respected. And in his commentary, he cites an article from the Jewish Encyclopedia. And that article claims that the most vigorous of the flock were the ones who were most likely to be single color hybrids, right? So they would have a recessive gene. It might be a black or a brown goat, solid color, but the recessive gene for the variegated colors, you know, the multiple colors, the stripes, the speckles, etc., they are holding that recessive gene. So their offspring could be the variegated sheep or the variegated goats with the different patterns that are being described here. So the technical term, these high-energy, single-color hybrids, they have heterosis. They have the vigor that a hybrid would possess. So a herdsman who knows their flock and is familiar with what goes on with sheep and goats and the patterns that occur in mating, would be able to observe which animals likely carry this recessive gene for spottedness or for stripes. So looking at that, Jacob has been caring for Laban's flocks for over 14 years now. He knows a thing or two about animal husbandry. Also, we know that in the next chapter, he attributes this whole thing to God's work throughout it. So if he knows that God is the one who did the work, then why is he using this superstition to make things come to pass? Hey, I want you to hear, this is a sneak preview of what's coming next week. Chapter 31, in verse 4 and following, Jacob is describing to Rachel and Leah what is going on with the flocks. And we come down to verse 8. If he said, the spotted shall be your wages, then all the flock bore spotted. Then if he said, the striped shall be your wages, then all the flock bore striped. Thus God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. In the breeding season of the flock, I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream that the goats mated with the flock were striped, spotted, and mottled. And he receives in this dream a message from God that he will ensure that Jacob receives a flock of his own. So Jacob had this dream. He had instruction from God. He knew what was coming to pass. So what's with the rods? Sarna suggests Jacob did this superstitious behavior of putting these rods before the female goats and sheep to distract and disguise what he was actually doing. Through observation, his empirical technique of breeding selectively these sheep and goats to maximize the odds that the stronger animals would be spotted and striped and the weaker, feeble animals would be solid colors. And he kept these flocks separate so that he would be able to be true to his word. So Laban stacked the deck, right? Laban stacked the deck so that there were no striped or spotted animals in the flock that Jacob was caring for. So statistically, he would receive hardly any animals at all. But because of God's blessing and Jacob's industry, thus the man increased. He increased greatly and had large flocks, female servants and male servants, and camels and donkeys, people, prosperity, and a place. We see God making all of these things come to pass, despite the deceit of Jacob, despite the deceit of Rachel, despite the deceit of Laban. And now, as Jacob is acting, I would argue, with integrity and ingenuity, God continues to bless. Jacob is not stealing Laban's flocks. Rather, Laban's flocks are becoming transformed into Jacob's. This is God's work. Jacob knew this. He doesn't mention the rods when talking to Rachel and Leah in the next chapter. He knows this is all of God. So this unusual story, and it is unusual, similar to 3 weeks ago, there are no explicit theological claims in this part of the narrative. This is a singular event, a unique event, with no strong theological claims or moral exhortations. So what are we supposed to do with this? What can we learn anything about how to live our lives more Christianly as a result of this unusual story about selective breeding and Jacob's prosperity? I think there is. As I've been reflecting on this text, the awareness of how we have been blessed by God and how God blesses both in and through our efforts Jacob wasn't idle. He didn't receive this dream about the sheep and the goats and just sit back and relax to see what happened. He was industrious. He worked hard, but his confidence was in God, and he was aware of how he had been blessed. Laban, arguably an unbeliever, an idolater, saw that he was being blessed because of Jacob. So I think it would be good for us to regularly ask ourselves, are we aware of how God has blessed us and how he's presently blessing us? And then, can we see how God might be blessing other people in our lives through us, through our work, through our efforts, through our care for those around us? And this is a good heart check moment. If we struggle to see how others, believers and unbelievers alike, might be blessed because of our presence in their lives, we need to ask ourselves some hard questions. We are, just as Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the people of Israel, as those who are in Christ, we are called to be a blessing to others. So how can we participate in the blessing work of God in the lives of those around us? And that's one thing. The other one is just looking at Laban and looking at the relationship between Laban and Jacob in this story. Deceit, taking unfair advantage, making this competition utterly stacked against Jacob. How do we conduct ourselves? How do we conduct ourselves in business and in competition with believers and unbelievers alike? Are we men and women of integrity? Do we represent our God well in the way that we live? When we are filing our taxes and we're going through our deductions, and here's a receipt that really should not be a deduction, but, you know, it looks good, and it would certainly help your bottom line. What do you do with that receipt? People see this. Our children see this. Our coworkers will see what we do with our expense reports when we turn them in. Do we conduct ourselves so that we are above reproach? No matter what the Labans in our lives may do, do we trust God and his promises and his sovereignty and live the harder life, one that maybe isn't as easy, by doing that which is right? It matters. This is our witness. And if we are living our lives in such a way that we are making decisions that are no different from those who don't know our Savior, then how effective will our witness be when we try to have conversations about eternal things with those coworkers, with those neighbors, with those family members? Our witnesses can be tarnished. So just as we should be asking ourselves, how am I being used as a blessing in the lives of others? We should also be asking, is my witness reflecting well on the God that I serve? How am I doing as an ambassador for Christ? And then finally, an encouragement. In a season such as we're in right now, where we aren't meeting because of COVID, this morning, we weren't able to even film or to live stream from the church because of the extreme weather. It's good to remember that God keeps his promises. God is good. God is faithful. And we see this in the life of Jacob. He was promised a people, and he wanted Rachel. He didn't want Leah. Rachel wanted children, but she couldn't have them, and so she did everything she could to try to make that come to pass. But it wasn't until she gave up, surrendered, and approached God in prayer that God heard her and saw her, and she had a child. God is the one who gave Jacob and Leah and Rachel these 12 children. God is the one who gave life. God is the one who is honoring his promise that there will be a people as numerous as the stars in the heavens. Prosperity. The mandrakes that Rachel tried for fertility drugs to try to get pregnant didn't work. The rods that Jacob put in front of the goats and in front of the sheep, ineffective. And I would argue he didn't intend for them to be. God is the one who granted prosperity to Jacob. Look at how he went from having effectively nothing as his wage because of Laban's manipulation to having the strongest, healthiest, and largest flock and a place. Well, Jacob is on his way. Jacob continues to run. He was running from Esau to Laban's home. And now, next week, we're going to see Jacob running again, this time in the opposite direction, from Laban towards Esau.
I had met God, but I had forgotten God. I kept running away from peace and the way of God. And all that time, I thought I was outrunning my sin. You can never outrun your sin. It will catch you. God tried to show me through my uncle Laban. I took two wives. I loved only one. Two women. One man. Bad arithmetic. Chaos. Uncle Laban was using me as I had used my father. My wives were using me as I had used my brother. But I was as blind as my father and as thick-headed as my brother. So I took my blessing in my own hands. Fair and square, like before. And he wanted to kill me, Laban, like before. Again, I ran with my wives and all our children. I ran for my life, just as I had run from Esau. Chaos followed. But God followed closer. He warned Laban in a dream not to touch me. And again, he delivered me. God was blessing, but not because of me, in spite of me.